Welcome to another...
The official podcast of The Leaky Cauldron.
The Leaky Cauldron.
The Leaky Cauldron.
Do you hear that, Earth? The Leaky Cauldron.
Just go! You're wasting time!
Welcome to Pottercast, the official podcast of The Leaky Cauldron, your number one source for theories, news and discussion, and interviews from the books and the films like me, Rupert Grimm. I play Ron Weasley in the Harry Potter films. And now your hosts, Melissa, John and Sue.
Welcome everybody to Pottercast number 122. It's a very special Pottercast. We have way more people than are usually on a full Pottercast, so we're going to go around Mickey Mouse Club style and say hello.
Hi, this is Nick from The Leaky Lounge, known as Nick TLC.
Hi, this is Minnie Mouse Sue.
I'm sorry. This is Sue.
Where are you from?
I'm from Squeeland.
Yeah.
Hufflepuffland.
This is Alex, Super Alex, whatever you want to call him.
But please call him Super Alex. That's the underlying message there.
Yes.
John.
The John from Dawlish Land, here representing the citizens of Dawlish.
I'm Matt from the Whomping Willows.
Yay.
He also is the Whomping Willows.
Yes.
Yes. He's the Whomping Willows.
Yes. I am the Whomping Willows.
Okay. We have a very, very special, exciting podcast. So, first, we have to say hello from our people at Borders. Today's podcast is brought to you by Borders. Haven't read Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows yet? Seriously? Don't worry. Borders is here to help. Pick up your copy, like right now, of this summer smash hit soon. You won't be able to hide from the spoilers forever. You can count on Borders to have it in stock and ready to take home tonight, along with the audiobook version. Even if you've read the book, the Harry Potter fun doesn't have to end yet. Visit BordersMedia.com or click on the Borders banner at the top of the podcast page to find out more.
Get the audiobook. It's awesome. I just gotta say that.
I want Joe to do the audiobook.
Joe can read. Joe can read darn good.
Very good.
Good thing, because she probably has to do that while she writes.
Yeah, well, I don't know.
Alright, so, Sue, what kind of news do we have this week? Because we've got so much to talk about.
Well, let's see, there was film and news. They are, as we've said before, filming Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, but the big news of the week is that
yeah,
they're doing...
Filming.
Two places.
We don't care!
Okay. Well, we don't know if Ralph Fiennes as Voldemort is actually going to be there, but that's a rumor, and...
Yes. And great, they're filming. And Joe was in the United States!
Yes!
What?
J.K. Rowling, as you all know, spent a week touring the United States and Canada. She did 4 events in the U.S. and 1 in Canada, talking to school children, and a very special reading in New York at Carnegie Hall for winners of the Scholastic Open Book Tour.
Yes.
And their guests. And there is so much new canon that all our heads are spinning.
Oh, my gosh. And there's been so many stories so far of people who got to attend these events, all of them, and how great experience it was getting their book signed by Joe and saying hello and having eye contact and getting that new canon, and holy crap, do we have a story to top all of that.
Yes, we do.
Yeah, we're not happy or anything.
No. We're not even 24 hours away from it.
No.
So we're in New York. We're at my apartment in New York because all these lovely people are with me this weekend. We all came together for a very special reason, and that was that Ms. Jo asked us to go and see her at Carnegie Hall, and not just the show. She asked 5 Leaky members to go and meet her backstage before the show.
Yes.
And we didn't talk about it before because we were in too much shock.
Pretty much. Still can't believe it actually happened. It was just the most extraordinary thing.
I have to actually concentrate to even remember everything.
Yeah.
Because it's such a blur almost at this point. But how do we even want to do this? We want to try to...
Can I tell the story of me calling you? You're in school.
Oh, God, yeah.
This might be a long podcast, guys. Get comfortable, get coffee.
Yeah.
You know? I called John first because my phone was acting up, and I couldn't have anybody else's number offhand. So
she resorted to me.
I resorted to John.
I guess.
Well, but you know what I mean?
Yes.
Yeah, whatever. So I called John, and I wasn't going to tell him immediately because I was really, no offense, really most excited about telling Sue. Because I couldn't wait, but I was just going to get Sue's number because I usually just auto-dial it.
Yeah.
And John, I had to tell him once I heard his voice. So I got very serious. I said, John, you know, I have to say something very serious. You know, I have to tell you something. And
I'm in trouble.
But it wasn't even your I'm in trouble voice. It was your, okay, what?
Like, what happened?
What happened?
Which guy died?
Stop!
No, it's terrible.
How cruel! It's the glorious thing you say from the same thing. Smack him.
sitting down with the pillow.
I hate you.
The three-year-old laughter.
Tried to eat you enough this weekend.
That's true.
She hisses at him all the time, though. I've seen that. All
right, anyway, back on topic. It's not funny. Stop laughing.
I'm done laughing. I'm
laughing at you and your tooth.
Hey.
Anyway, I told him, and he threw up a bit.
Yeah, I was at school, and I had to find an empty classroom and run around in circles inside of it. The very idea, in a few weeks' time, we would be face-to-face with the goddess rolling, is too much. It was too cool.
Yeah.
It's immediately like, oh my god, what the hell you say? Knowing that you're going to have more than a second right there in front of her, more like, We didn't even really know how long it was going to be.
No.
We knew it was going to be like a certain window before her performance that she'd have to meet with people, but that could have been a minute, it could have been a wave hello, it could have been a half hour, it could have been, you know, a sleepover, who knows?
So
it was somewhere in a happy middle.
We had a sleepover. George was over there and
we all brought PJ pants and marshmallows.
Then I told John that I had to tell Sue, and his reaction was, I need to be on that phone call.
Yeah. So, we taped that one, didn't we?
We did. We're not going to play it.
Maybe next
week.
Maybe next week we'll show highlights.
If we get enough email requests.
No! Yeah.
Oh, that was so awesome.
No!
Sue didn't even make noise. That's how you know. Okay?
Yeah.
She was like, and we all cracked up. Because my mother was sitting next to me, because I was at my mom's house. My mother was sitting next to me crying. Mm. I was crying. Sue was crying. John was just stunned silent.
Do you remember what I said when we called Sue up and she said, what's going on?
Yeah. Well, she said, oh, what's I said, I have to tell you something. Oh, what's the matter? What's the matter? John goes, I was in a car accident.
And here I was. All concerned. Just, what happened? I'll be right there.
See, I wanted to bring you from very low to very high in like a second. So he would have the reaction you did, which was
because that's why she had the reaction she did.
Though. Yes, because of my game.
Not that I'm an emotional person at all. No.
And then we called Nick. It's like we're picking up staff members as we go.
Yes.
We called Nick, and Nick never says three words, ever.
Yeah. Nick's like, what?
Slow-mo.
It was all over Skype.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes.
It was amazing. And then we called Doris. Which you might be thinking, hey, Doris is not here.
Who the hell is Doris?
Doris is our lovely project manager who runs the inner workings of who's working on what and how the inner operations are going. It's really a huge job, and she does it amazingly. And you've heard her do fan interviews.
Of course.
But then she couldn't get out of work. Mean boss person. Ooh. Who I hope doesn't listen to this podcast.
Jerks.
And so we had to ask Alex.
Yay!
I'm kidding.
No, but I wish we could have brought the entire staff, 200 people, you know.
And then her little majesty suite, the Carnegie Hall.
But the reason it went the way it did was that this was clear that Joe was being thankful for the lead up to book 7 about the spoiler stuff and my lovely staff, how they acted. So, programming kind of came second. I'm sorry. But then we call Alex and he had to wake his family up and okay. So now we have everybody's been told. What's next?
What's next?
We've got to cut this down.
We all went shopping and got pretty close.
We did.
No. Well, let's fast forward to the night of the thing.
Yeah.
Which was yesterday. We all got dressed up, all pretty, and made our way over to the Carnegie Hall and went to the little side stage door and attempted to not run into anybody because at that point no one knew we were going in there. And it was just, for some reason, fun to keep it a secret. So we ran into a few fans, a few friends, and went in there, was brought up into a little holding area with a few other people that were going to be lucky enough to meet Joe. One of them was a girl who had worked on Leaky for a while. Now she actually has her own site called In Honor of Rolling.
No, InHonorRolling.com.
In Honor of Rolling.
No, but the website address is InHonorRolling.com.
That's right.
No of.
Yes.
5 straight plugs.
There you go.
Yay. Hey, Michaela.
Check it out. And a few other people as well were all very excited, and they all went in, first. And
while we almost vomited all over the
I couldn't sit still.
Yeah. We brought her a big thing of like Pottercast t-shirts and messages from our staff and letters.
I'm going to say this plug. Her mama, Miss Carol's mama and Ellie.
That's right.
I'm going to plug her, Melissa's mom. Did this beautiful basket of the things we had.
It was so cool.
It was so cool. And do you want to talk about the staff?
Yeah, the staff. We couldn't even announce it to the full staff just for a while. And so we just said, hey, there's a big project, you know, just it's secret, but give us a message like you were talking to Joe and thanking me for the series. And we put them together, and we had some of those, and then we did a little intro.
Yeah.
And we put the Leaky song at the end of it, which we should put on this podcast.
Sure, why not?
Brad from Draco and the Malfoys made us a song for the Leaky Cauldron, and so we put that at the end of the CD as well.
Yeah.
And we gave her a copy of Jingle Spells, which you should be buying right now.
Absolutely.
Right now.
Click the button on Leaky Cauldron.
Please put that button up.
And find out all the details.
Okay. Sorry, somebody was murdered in my hallway.
Yeah.
Mushka, are you here?
Stop that!
I hate you so bad!
When you go to hell, cats are going to kill
you. Lord knows that's where all the cats are.
She walked right into that! Yeah! You know that she's going to take every opportunity to abuse poor helpers to be
lucky. I hate him!
So then what happened, Melly? They said.
Oh, they said they came in to go last, but certainly not least. Yeah. And so then we were all brought in to see Joe.
We all walked in, and
I
was wheeled in on a wheelchair, long since painted, carrying a basket of gifts.
And she just launched out of her room and into hugs.
Yes.
And greeting everybody, and it was so lovely.
Well, it's funny though, because you guys, the girl ladies, got the hugs immediately, and I'm like, uh-oh. I didn't come in here for a Joe handshake. I need a hug. before the time was through, I got my hug and subsequently hooked up the other two boys here with hugs.
Yeah.
That's what I do.
We thanked him deeply.
Yeah.
Because as we were leaving, he was on and you said, oh, no, I want a hug.
Yeah.
And she said, okay. And then she goes, well, I have to hug you now, meaning Nick.
Yeah.
And then you looked at Alex and said, give me a hug.
Yeah.
You know, it was really, really warm and wonderful. And she, you know, she's just so chill. She just came out and started talking to us, and her daughter Jessica was there, and they talked about how they were huge fans of Leaky, and they thanked the staff for being alert about spoilers and all the work they did with the lead up, which was really gratifying for us.
Oh yeah.
And then we got to ask her a couple questions.
Yeah.
Mm.
I totally wimped out of anything that anyone would ever think I would ask her.
I know.
No Dollish, no Horkree.
No Dollish, no Horkree.
No Mr. Blood.
No Mr. Blood.
Oh, Mr. Blood.
Oh, don't even remind me.
But was the one glorious, beautiful question.
It's funny that you get all excited about this because not a definitive.
I'm angry because she didn't answer. Okay, I set it up. I went in there with an agenda that she had to address this. And I said, you know, John maintains that Helga Hufflepuff can play at the house elf.
Yes.
Tortured too. And she didn't make the argument stop. Go ahead, tell them.
She said, Helga, as I predicted, Helga offered them refuge.
And then said...
Well, it's not the first thing she said. She said, it's a very interesting question.
Thing.
It's very interesting that you asked this. And I don't know if we ever knew definitively that Helga had any role in burning the house elves of the castle, but it seems like that's what she had said. It was that Helga of the Founders was what brought them there.
Yeah.
She said that...
Offered them refuge.
Said, in fairness to John.
She said, in fairness to John, you could say that the kind plantation owner does not equate to, you know, relieving them of slavery. So,
well, let's continue the rest of the conversations and then...
He said, as Dumbledore gave Dobby refuge, so did Helga bring the house elf refuge. However, Dumbledore brought Dobby in as a paid employee and all the other house elves.
And she addressed that. She said, you know, their mindset is that they don't want to leave. So
they don't know any better after how many generations of house elves living and dying and not knowing anything else.
But they were not being persecuted.
She left it open for us, which is awesome, because I can keep teasing them.
They don't care. They don't care. Let's talk more about what Joe said.
Yeah. Well, Joe was like, I was elated, and I have to say that, and Joe was quite, she knew I was elated.
And so I just said, you know, she was very into Hufflepuff, and she said, yeah, you know, what explains to me why.
And I talked to them, and it got to the point, and she goes, you know Neville.
Oh, Neville.
We were talking about other things. She goes, Neville, when the sorting hat put it up, they put the sorting hat on Neville, it initially wanted to put him in Hufflepuff.
Yes.
Just saying. Right
poor
there,
Neville.
New canon. But then it's all...
How embarrassing for him.
Poor Neville.
But so that was very... I mean, she was very enthused about Neville and asking us what we thought about Neville's role in Book 7 and saving the
day.
How
much she loved it.
Yeah,
and then she revealed to us that about the thing that she was reading, the passage that she was reading, which was so much different. And as soon as she said, she goes, well, it's the part where Ron comes back. And we all went, ah!
We loved that part. We can't forget the coolest thing she said, which for me was better than finding out about, you know, Dawlish or the Horcrux, because it actually has relevance to a lot more people than me, was when we talked about why Harry wasn't really a Horcrux.
Yay!
Was crazy, because I wasn't really expecting it, but it was something that we all talked about, how it doesn't make any sense, because in the same book, she talks about how a human is an opposite of a Horcrux. And she's like, yes, you know, that's right.
She's the one who actually said that first.
Yeah, she
said, you know,
it's in the dang book.
She didn't say in the dang book.
No.
Well, she didn't say in the dang book, but, you know, she did, you know, reiterate that that was correct. And she said that, you know, at that point in the story, it's a matter of convenience to call him a Horcrux when there's no other better thing to call him at that point. But, you know, technically he wasn't a Horcrux because Voldemort never intended on him becoming one. But yeah, Harry was written up in the book as a Horcrux as a matter of convenience at that point, because it was too complicated.
Something. And it's never happened before, so it's the most convenient thing to call him.
Yes.
And so, but she said that she wanted to make it very clear, it was very important that it was clear that he wasn't actually a Horcrux.
Yeah.
Even though Dumbledore said he was a Horcrux.
Which we would love to see on your site somewhere at some point, Joe, so people...
yeah, I know. The mass conspiracy.
Yes.
What else?
Astra.
She doesn't give a toot about programming and coding. Alex.
Yeah, she said, she asked me, so you code, don't you? I said, yes. And she's like, that does nothing for me whatsoever.
Yeah.
No, so that means nothing to me.
That means nothing.
A little different.
That means nothing to me.
Yeah, but her daughter Jessica is into that stuff, though. She wants to be an engineer, which it was a funny little comment she had made about how, you know, they're so different in that, you know, Joe's all into, like, the literature, the creative stuff, artsy stuff, and Jessica has a real scientific mind, which is kind of interesting, interesting how that happens with families. They're very unique.
Well, Sue and Joe shared a very special moment about being single moms.
It was just a very powerful.
They hugged and made everybody cry.
I almost cried.
Right now. I want you to know this. People, Joe is a genuinely lovely, kind, caring person. And she really cares about her fans, and she actually stops and listens to everyone. She looks you in the eye. She listens to what people think and what she did, and it was just very special to me. And I can't talk anymore because I'm very emotional. Meant a lot to me. It was awesome. Joe rocks.
Yeah.
Oh, can we say one thing that she said about what she liked at the end, about what one of her favorite scenes in at the end?
Saying, charge! I wanted to say, but it was so confusing. Everybody was saying goodbye at that point. And what was amazing about McGonagall saying charge is that it comes directly on top of Ron feeling the first grief for Fred.
Mm-hmm.
And she has this enormously funny moment right on top of that. Who does that? How can you do that? You know, and still retain the funniness and the sadness.
Yeah.
You know? It's a talented writer.
Very awesome. I told her about how I predicted the Knights of Hogwarts.
Yeah, you did?
I think you were the one that brought it up.
Oh,
no,
I did.
Oh, you did too? Oh, that's right, yeah.
What she said?
She's
like, oh, really? You know, she was kind of amused at that.
She was. But she liked it, though. She thought it was really cool.
Yeah.
She was just really enthusiastic and just genuine and, you know, people from Scholastic. She did, but Joe was just...
Yeah.
It was awesome. She smelled great still. Looked fab. Her hair was fab. It was awesome. Yeah.
But now the challenge to all podcast listeners and all of their post meeting Joe letters that they'll be writing to her is to explain to her what it is to listen to a podcast. Now, she hasn't quite figured that out yet.
I'm sure Jessica could tell her.
Jessica, we're talking to you now, Jessica, because Lord knows you listen. Download it for...
put it on her iPod. Get her one. She's got some money.
I'm sure there's somewhere lying around the house you can go into the couch cushions and, you know, get some change for an iPod. Yeah, give her a few episodes to start her out with. You know, send her out when she goes on her jogs or whatever she does. To keep... I won't go there. Joe's looking good at the thing. Never mind. Don't look at me like I'm retarded.
Well,
she has to exercise. Look at her.
She's fabulous. She's gorgeous. She's absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah.
We love her. So
when she gets this iPod, should we like, you know...
We should just send her an iPod with every episode on it.
Oh, God. Thank you, Mr. Subtle.
That'd be fun.
Not so much.
I gave her a few t-shirts and stickers.
T-shirts and stickers. Yeah. She really enjoyed the basket, so.
I think you should just send her the live podcast from Phoenix Rising.
Dude, that was fun.
Or just that clip where I'm playing.
Just that part.
Aw.
Okay, guys, we have to talk about something really serious. I know it's on everybody's mind.
Oh, gosh.
This week.
Thousands of comments.
Thousands. Actually, thousands.
Yes. Yeah.
It's scandalous.
Yes.
It's huge news. It's very serious.
It is. I just couldn't believe my ears.
Yeah, I don't think I'll ever think about this person the same.
Yes. Dumbledore, unbeknownst to all of us, had a huge stamp collection.
Oh. I know stamps.
Muggle hobby.
How could he?
That's unbelievable.
I don't believe it.
I'm a little disturbed by this because how my beliefs are, I don't believe in collecting anything, much less stamps. And I was raised that way, and I just can't put it past it in my mind.
It changes everything about him. Why would she reveal this now?
I know.
What's the point?
If it was important that he collected stamps, why not write that into one of the books?
Yeah. Or why not give us clues, right?
Yeah.
Matt?
Pardon?
Right? Why not give us clues as we read the books?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I'm not saying that every stamp collector has to act the same way, or that there's such a thing as, like, a stereotypical stamp collector. But, you know, it was just such a shock that I was not expecting it.
Well, Nick and I were discussing our religions, and Nick's religion is against collecting stamps.
Hugely.
Yeah.
I mean, it says in just about every religious text I could find, you know, Kama Sutra and whatever, that, you know, you just don't do that. It's, it goes against every fiber of my being.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, clearly then he's just not a great wizard. He was just all a big lie.
It was a lie. I mean, ew, she wants children to read these books?
Well, it seems like you guys are all kind of bothered by this, and I actually would like to offer another opinion, which is that I think stamp collecting is actually a very worthwhile hobby. I think it's safe, it's fun, and I'm actually a huge stamp collector myself.
I can't talk
Whoa.
To you anymore.
I've collected many stamps.
Wow.
All different kinds. I have like the Elvis set. And
really
whoa,
cool.
Those are pretty rare, aren't they?
Like the butterflies and
nice.
American flags, which I actually hear Dumbledore, the Fallout story, he doesn't collect American flags.
What?
That's even worse.
There's a certain kind of stamp that he won't collect?
Yeah, apparently.
Every stamp collector has a type.
Yeah.
Don't sound too excited.
I mean, but
okay, I think
we
figured it out.
Anyway,
guys.
Aside from that,
yeah. Also, Dumbledore's gay. That's it. Let's move on.
Okay.
No, I'm kidding. We can't move on. But yeah, I hope that demonstrated a little bit how we feel about Joe outing Dumbledore and letting us all know that he's gay. I mean, I'm just gonna open it up. What was your guys' reaction when this happened?
I was, you know, immediately thinking, oh my gosh. You know, because Joe laughed it off, even with the whole fan fiction comment she made at the thing. But, you know, I was most looking forward to reading some of the comments we'd be getting about all this. Because the Harry Potter fandom, at least, you know, the people who follow it super close and read the websites, make their own podcasts and stuff. This bunch of people is, you know, a fairly liberal bunch, if you want to take, you know, statistics. That's been sorted out long ago. So to have this issue come up, I was very interested to see, you know, what people would say. And the only two things that, I mean, obviously there was a good, well, not good, a fairly small percentage of negative response to it. But the two things that that people are trying to clear up for some of these people who are spouting, I guess, what could be called hate speech, is when you make a comment like, uh-oh, Dumbledore's gay, it's a good thing he didn't come on to Harry.
Yeah.
You know.
That is disgusting.
Yeah.
Not that he would come on to Harry. There's a big difference between being gay and being a child molester and being in an incestual relationship.
Yes.
Or being, you know, child molestation, pedophilia, child abuse, sexual abuse. None of those things equal gay. And I'm really angry at the intolerance that's going on Leaky and everything that we've had to delete in that comment. It doesn't even have to do with sexuality. It's about power, pedophilia, and child molestation, and rape. Those things are about power more than sexuality. Dumbledore is gay. He's also a brilliant teacher and a kind man and a compassionate person. And he loves Harry like a son.
Yeah.
Doesn't change anything else about him.
You know, going into the specifics of the greater issue people are running with for some reason is that somehow hearing about Dumbledore being gay is Joe introducing sexuality into this, you know, at the last minute. And be like, what books were all of you guys reading
right.
when people were making out all the time and Ron and Lav
like,
yeah.
Eels, I love that line, you know.
Exactly. I mean, there's, you know, undercurrents of this stuff happening all over the place. And just, you know, it was all hetero stuff. You know, up until this point, but it's like, you know, saying it's just a funny double standard where you can be all like, you know, oh, it's cute when we think that Ron and Hermione had crushes on each other for all these years, but then suddenly it's like, oh, Dumbledore had a crush on Grindelwald, and that's, you know, whoa, we don't need to hear about what he's doing with his, you know, other wand. And that's what people are saying. You know, it's like suddenly it all has to do. Oh, it's a big sexual thing now.
Yeah.
You know, there's no.
I think there's a difference between Rowling being sexual or having the text be sexual, and there just being sexuality. Like someone's sexuality, their orientation in and of itself is not sexual.
Yeah.
It doesn't say anything about Dumbledore's activities. It doesn't say anything about his love life necessarily, except, you know, the type or the gender of the person that he would be attracted to.
It really had nothing to do with the plot. It didn't change the story.
No. Right.
I mean,
except that it informs.
It gave us a little more detail about why the Grindelwald thing was so, so tragic on so many levels. It was just terrible.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, the thing still remains the same as far as mine. I'm like, okay, that's just another, just like all the other plethora of canon that we have learned.
Yeah.
And I mean, we've learned so many different things about, you know, people being soulmates and what, you know, Cho went on to marry a muggle and all these other amazing little things. Well, that doesn't make me think, oh, well, Cho Chang is no, you know, because she married a muggle.
Yeah.
It makes her any less of a witch. You know, I just, like, these are just little things about the characters, and I was so disappointed that people said, well, now, Dumbledore is now diminished, and that just...
Yeah. Or Joe is now diminished.
Yeah,
that's
Joe.
That's an extraordinarily brave thing. She may be somebody with a lot of power and influence, but this kind of thing has hurt other people before, and she just was so blasé, and so, yes, not blasé, but just very confident. Yes, he's gay, that's it. You know, and when people act like that, more people act like that, that's when we get more tolerance.
Yeah, well, Joe, she was asked another question that night about... you know, the similarities between, you know, the Death Eaters and the Nazis and World War II and all that stuff. And she said if there was any, you know, overarching lessons to be learned from her series. And she said it was a prolonged, you know, lesson and, you know, about, you know, about tolerance and having people just, you know, get rid of prejudice and bigotry and that kind of thing. And she says that, you know, that's something that, you know, that and questioning authority and questioning that, you know, not everything you hear from authority or the press is true, those sort of things is something that would draw negative responses and criticism, but she thinks it's important to teach young people about that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So to introduce, you know, different sexualities among your main characters in your book is, you know, it's a brave thing, only in that she's one of the first to do so in such a popular franchise.
Like certainly this. Nothing that's popular, that became popular without having gayness as a part of it, without having sexuality as a part of it, has done this. And, you know, fans and slashers for years, and I say slashers, you guys probably don't know it, not all of you know what slashers are. Slash is homosexuality in sort of like fan fiction fandom. The slash refers to the actual slash that goes between the ship. So if I ship like Harry and Draco, which a lot of people do, and I don't, but I think a lot of people do, you to represent it, I put H/D, you know, and that's Harry Draco. Anyway, they've been saying for years that, oh, wouldn't it be great if there was a character that was gay? Everybody thought that Sirius was gay for a while.
Remus was.
Or Remus, because he's very fastidious, and, you know. And so, wouldn't it be great, and well, look what she'd do for the cause, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So any Harry Potter character being gay would have been huge for the movement, for the gay civil rights movement, for everything. But for her to come out and say, the most respected person.
Yeah.
You know, he might have been a jerk for a little while there, but he's a brilliant, respected person.
Totally.
He had his reasons for being a jerk.
Also, he was in love.
Well, he had heartbroken.
His heartbroken.
There's two other issues I really would like that have also come up in the conversation that are very, very strong, and this has been, maybe perhaps it's just more so in America than it is in other countries, but I don't know, but there was a lot of criticism and complaints about Joe using biblical quotes in the book and the reference to Corinthians, and I believe on the tombstone, and calling Joe a hypocrite for having this information I think that's just another example of the intolerance and kind of, in my opinion, missing the whole point of what it is, but I'm not going to make judge of how you choose to believe in your life, that is fine, but to berate Joe and to berate anyone else that do that, to say that is, Joe is hypocritical, and it's just...
I
like the words to go on that, because that was just so offensive to me.
We all sort of turned around to each other and said, oh my gosh, Laura Mallory's going to explode.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've got to email her and ask her what
it is. You know, and the Laura Mallory's in the world can explode, you know, it doesn't make them any more, you know, relevant or right to any of
this. You can think it's wrong. You can believe it's wrong. You can follow that interpretation of the Bible and whatever, but it doesn't mean you have to bring intolerance on other people. I'm pretty sure that's in the Bible too about being wrong. You know,
I mean, we're not assuming to sit here and think that our hour-long podcast is going to change people's minds about this stuff, but it's as simple as, you know, this is Joe's book, these are Joe's characters, and, you know, she's only giving us this information because she's on a book tour and was asked by, you know, true fans, you know, more details about the characters that they love so much. She's not coming out here and trying to get extra popularity. Lord knows she doesn't need any popularity. She goes out of her way to make sure she's not, you know, giving her children any, you know, celebrity, you know, influences on their lives. She's not that kind of person. Her books don't need it.
Which, by the way, I mean, she's being successful. Jessica was the most down-to-earth girl.
Yeah, totally.
Just kind of chill, you know, hanging out, wearing sneakers, you know, Jessica.
Yeah.
She's not a little Paris Hilton. There's no way.
So any of you guys think that, you know, she said all this just to get a stir out of, you know, everybody. It's ludicrous. If you see the sales on these books, they don't need any kind of nonsense.
No. Oh, yeah, the publicity. They're saying, oh, yeah, Joe just needs the publicity. I'm like, hello?
I mean, that's...
not so much.
That's ridiculous. So we're not going to change our minds, but we are going to keep our site and our podcast up to, you know, a high level of intolerance and integrity, not intolerance.
Okay. Well, we're certainly going to talk about this more in the future and with more learned people, but let's take a little break right now to talk about some Wizard Rock stuff, and then we'll get back to all the other stuff Joe said.
Okay.
As you know, we have Matt from the Wampin' Willows here.
Hi.
And we're going to talk about Jingle Spells for a minute, which is the charity compilation Wizard Rock CD that you should all have bought by now. What are you doing? We only have a certain amount left, and if you don't buy it, you can pre-order it.
Yeah.
If you don't buy it, we're not printing more. So if you want it, go get it before somebody else gets your copy. There'll be a button on Leaky by the time this podcast goes up, and there'll be a button on podcast.com at all times. We have songs from... Sorry, that was just a little hint for John to do his job.
I made graphics.
You made graphics. So we have songs from... Who is it now?
14 bands.
14 bands.
We have Harry and the Potters, Catch Love, Draco and the Malfoys, Ginny and the Heartbreakers, The Moaning Myrtles, Ministry of Magic, The Mudbloods, Hungarian Horntails, Hermione Cruikshank's Experience.
Oliver Boyd and the Rememberals.
Yes, Oliver Boyd.
Remus Lupin's,
that guy.
Grennan Forge, that guy.
Yeah.
Grennan Forge. We're missing two guys.
Well, there's a bonus version, though. Are you counting the one?
Well, there's a bonus something that if you buy the CD, you will get an email with later that has a link to the bonus version of a song.
But,
and the Parcel Mouth. And there's also the Whomping Willows, duh.
What?
We didn't mention you.
We didn't count you.
We didn't count you.
That was my joke.
What about Voldemort's Outside? Did that not make the cut
on
the CD? Or is that a bonus track, too?
I hate
it. I thought if you, listen to the Whomping Willow song and let it run for 45 extra seconds of silence, Voldemort's Outside starts
up. Anyway.
What happened?
But a lot of you have been very embraced since we announced it, and it's really exciting, and everybody... And John is a classic example of someone who didn't really like Wizard Rock.
But I didn't like it, all you Wizard Rockers.
He was aware of Wizard Rock, and he just, he knew a few...
He was very aware of Wizard Rock. We spent a couple weeks on the road with Harry Potter. He was very aware of Wizard Rock.
Out of the bathroom, he was long hair.
After hearing this music, though, haven't you, Mr. John?
This is my favorite Wizard Rock album by far, hands down. I love Christmas songs, but, these are all very solid tracks here.
I think, all the bands just totally stepped up and really submitted their best work, and, except for Harry and the Potters.
Yeah, they stopped.
I think they got a little lazy.
They're good for an anthem on every album.
Oh, stop it, I love it, guys.
I love Paul and Jake.
Send your letters now to
dear God.
No, everything track 1 through 14, it's awesome.
Yeah.
It's really, really good.
And there's a good variety of it. I like it. I mean, you can hear samples of it on Leaky. And there's a good good variety of different types of music, of the Christmas music, too. I mean, there's some that are just really light and some kind of country kind of tune that's more just upbeat and stuff. There's a lot of songs, I think, that are not just strictly Christmas, that are not one denomination, if you would not be Christian, perhaps.
Right.
Holiday songs.
Rocking Around the Bathroom Stall.
Yeah. The Myrtles are funny, very funny.
Funny girl.
Humor and wit and charm in this music.
But some people's reaction to this was, I hate Wizard Rock. And why do you think some people get a little weird about that?
I don't know. I think there's definitely one thing I've noticed, I guess as I've gotten more involved in the fandom, is that there is an element that just doesn't like Wizard Rock, doesn't get Wizard Rock, and doesn't really understand why it's part of things.
Why is it part of things?
Part of things, yeah. I'm not very smart. I'm a musician. No, but I think that a couple of the conventions that I've been to, there have been, people overhearing when bands are on stage, why are these people here and stuff like that. And you know what? I think it's okay. I think people are entitled to their opinions, and I think that part of it might be that a lot of the music, a lot of the people involved are either really, this is their first band, this is the first time that they're working on a band, or they come from a DIY punk background, and their sense of aesthetics is a little bit unconventional. So you have a lot of bands. Harry and the Potters are a great example of a band that really came from a local punk scene, and then so they're not going to be releasing perfect songs that you would hear on top 40 radio. They're going to be releasing rock songs, and I think that's part of it too.
Yeah.
Can I ask, what was it, how did you get your inspiration for your song? I mean,
If you haven't heard the sample of Lumpy's song, please go right now.
Mm-hmm. Hell, it'll be on the show, won't it?
The whole song?
The whole song, a clip of it.
Yeah.
Sure.
So, I mean, how did you come up with that?
I don't know. It's ridiculous. I have this thing where every time I put a song on a compilation that's coming out or something, I decide to do a hip-hop song. And I think, like, part of me wishes that I could rap. I'm not, like, a huge hip-hop fan, but there are certain hip-hop bands that are, like, among my favorite bands. And I wish I could do it. I'm friendly with a rapper from Providence named Storm Davis, and, like, I look at this guy and how, you know, gifted he is with his rhyming, and I wish I could do that. I wish I had that talent. So, also, it lends itself to certain humor that I can't really get out in my normal songs. Like,
normal songs are pretty funny.
You have such clever wit, though, in your music. I enjoy your songs because it's true. It's true. It's very sharply, very, I like that. That's the kind of humor that appeals to me. There's a lot of it.
Thank you. I try.
So don't razz on Wizard Rock, guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, Wizard Rock really, it's like fan fiction set to music, really, in a lot of ways. Like, I feel a certain allegiance with fan fiction, it's just another creative thing being expressed, and it's a love of Harry Potter that's being expressed. And
exactly. There's all kinds of ways that fans have found to express their love of Harry Potter, and it's mostly the people with imaginations that like Harry Potter anyway, so they're usually the creative types. And if they can do crafts, they can do baked goods, they can write stories, make fan films, make music. I mean, music and, you know, writings and films are more mainstream, you know, endeavors than perhaps, you know, crochet, so they're going to be open to more scrutiny than other things. And they're also things that people have defined tastes on. Like, oh, I only like this kind of music, so your music is crap.
Yeah.
Well, so it's, you know, it's all done by your fellow fans here, guys. So you can hate it, take it, or leave it. But if you like Christmas songs, you probably will like this album.
And this album, every penny of proceeds goes to Book Aid International, an organization that sets up libraries in third world countries. It's preventative. It's like providing preventative medicine instead of the cures to diseases that we wouldn't have if we had preventative medicine, you know. It's people, no commentary there. And it's really great, because then these countries can educate themselves and people can pick any kind to go and educate themselves.
Yeah.
And if this counts itself out, then we will have a huge amount of money to donate to them, and that's going to be fantastic. So it's going well. Things are selling well. You need to buy it now because it's not going to last. We're telling you. And let's hear a song. Let's hear a bit of Wumpy's "Oh Christmas Tree" song, rap thing, guy.
God.
Thing.
I'm spending Christmas chilling with my crew on Hogwarts grounds. We got Hagrid spinning records because he knows how to get down. And he made a pact with Draco that there wouldn't be no drama. So Draco's got the mic and he be flowing like Madonna. And Pansy's right beside him, she can rock the synthesizer. And Dumbledore just got here and he brought some appetizers. He's got kettle chips, some onion dip, and a plate of cocktail wieners. Clam cakes, New England clam chowder, and a couple pounds of steamers. And the giant squid,
I love that kid.
He's a hit with all the ladies. He'll get more groupies than Sebastian Bach did in the 80s.
So if Wumpy gets too riled up, do we have to hit his knot or anything to get him to stay still?
Oh!
Wusha can do it.
Wusha could do it, yeah.
I think she has. She's trying to attack him several times.
She was sniffing your hand this morning.
She hasn't attacked me so much as flirted with me. I think she likes
something
me.
Going on.
I mean,
there.
That's the dendrophile.
A dendrophile? Is that what it means to like trees?
I think so.
Learn a new word.
New word from trees.
What?
I don't know.
What else did we find out from Joe at her little
so
bookstore?
So much! You always said that you wanted to know what Petunia said would have said to Harry.
Yes, because I thought Petunia would bring him up to the attic and go to Willie Strunk's, yada
yada.
But Petunia didn't say a dang thing. But Joe gave thoughts that Petunia was thinking she wanted to say some words, which were...
Good luck. I know what you're up against. I hope it turns out okay.
Yeah. My favorite thing I have to say was her talking about the two different types of love, about Bellatrix and Molly Weasley.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so amazing how she talked about, here is Bellatrix with her sick, obsessive love. Nick and I had a great conversation about this earlier. Right? What did you think about when she said that?
Exactly. Just the symbolicness of it. And She said that there was another significance to it, though, too, aside from the two clashes of love, and that just being that I don't remember.
That Molly is a very talented witch whose light is hidden under a bushel,
right,
because she's always in the kitchen cooking.
Yeah.
But the cooking is harder than it looks, and even in the wizarding world. And it was showing that she can be a talented witch. In other words, just because you've dedicated your life to your family doesn't mean that you don't have other talents.
Mm-hmm.
That a woman has dedicated her life to it doesn't mean she doesn't have other talents, which is...
Well, boys too, I'm sure.
Well, boys too, but it's mostly a thing that people think about women.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, look at...
Damn right! What?
Look at how well Hermione did.
I was...
Cooking.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And she's Hermione.
She's Hermione.
Yeah.
Hermione's like, well, how about we just use the invisibility cloak and steal some food?
Yeah.
Instead of me having to cook. You know?
Well, that was on a string of conversation about how somebody asked how she decided to pick Molly to be the one that would kill Bellatrix and not someone else, like maybe Neville. And Joe had knew all along that it was going to be Molly to take out Bellatrix. And that was why. It's just to, you know, we had canon conclundrums about whether or not how powerful Arthur and Molly were, even though we never really see them do a heck of a lot up until, you know, Deathly Hallows. And I think she pretty much answered that quite affirmatively.
Alex, what was your favorite thing that she said?
I love that she had such a good sense of humor throughout the entire thing. I thought she was on the ball with every little thing. Like, when she was doing her reading, and one of the lines that Ron said that... She didn't know if she wanted to go through with it, and she stopped afterwards saying, it was something like,
I heard
you coming out of my
pocket.
Yeah.
And she stopped for a second thinking, do I want to let the joke go, or do I just want to keep reading?
Yeah.
And she finally just couldn't hold it in and just let go, and the entire crowd just burst into laughter. It was, I thought that was one of the best things. That and the question that the little 8-year-old girl asked about Aberforth.
Oh my god!
Oh god!
It's cold.
If you weren't there, it was the funniest question. An 8-year-old girl asked Joe Rowling what the spells were that Aberforth got caught practicing on a goat, and she didn't know how to answer it. She just she gave a very very clean answer for an 8-year-old girl. So
and she said, that's my answer to you.
You.
Meaning, because her first question was, how old are you?
Yeah.
Like, this will determine how I answer this question, you know.
Aberforth is really not.
And she was the cutest little girl. Have you ever seen, there's a particular episode of The West Wing where President Bartlett kisses this little girl on the head, this little blonde girl. She's got the cutest little, like, precocious looking girl. And that's exactly what this little 8-year-old looked like. Blonde hair, you know, just so smart.
Yeah.
And, you know, she went, how old are you? She goes, 8, and she just shrugs her shoulders. Like, what? I'm 8.
You know, the thing about this whole tour, Joe has been asked these questions that, like, fans have wanted to know. I mean, there's been some repeat questions, but I think Joe is almost like, it's like she wants to, she's just been waiting to answer a lot of these questions. And someone asked her what was the one question that no one asked her, was it about Dumbledore's wand?
Which is the question that we asked her in that chat.
Yes.
You know, but she still hasn't said what's on the inside of the wand. She has to know, would you go ask your mom, please?
Yeah. This is our fun little new
game.
Yeah.
Hey, Jessica!
It's time for our Hey Jessica segment.
Our question for Joe this week, Jessica. Go bring it over. It's really funny.
But Joe is here.
Podcast guys want to know.
Yeah. Ma, I got another question for podcast.
Yeah.
Get out a piece of paper, Jessica. We're going to ask you a few.
Mm-hmm.
No. Yeah, what's on the inside?
Yeah.
Oh! Come on.
No, she said, well, I would have said if, you know, she said, she was telling how she would have, like, kind of drawn it away, you know, too much, like saying, well, Draco's would have Hogwarts, she answered it, I think, on her website or something.
Yeah, and a long time ago, she said.
Yeah.
At a reading or something.
But, oh, Joe, come on.
Well, there are all these questions that we came up beforehand that we were thinking we would ask her. Every last one of them got nailed.
Good thing, because all those questions went out of our head once we walked into the room.
Yeah.
Well, we asked the one about why, when in Chamber of Secrets, Harry got stabbed by the thing, yada yada, did the Horcrux not die, yada yada. And someone asked that at the thing as well. And she said that, I get asked this a lot. And I'm like, oh, crap.
Twice in one day.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But she's so cool about it, though. She just answered the stuff, and she's just was into it.
Sure.
Go, Joe, go!
Yeah. Oh, well, guys, it has been 55 minutes, and I'm really sure that we are going to be talking about this for weeks and weeks to come.
Yeah, this might even derail us, actually.
Yeah.
From our regularly scheduled format.
if we continue to go with our bit by bit segment in Phoenix Files. We might even have a Joe's book tour bit by bit. So dang much, you know?
She was a set him up, knock him down with the laughter. It
yeah.
was amazing.
I couldn't get over how dang funny she was. And you know she's clever, and you know she's witty because of how she writes. But she can do it off the top of her head, too. And
But that's what she always said that she's not. She said that her sister is the funny one.
That's
and she's the one in person. But other people have said that it's sort of true because she was more reserved in the past, and her sister was always the really funny in person one. But now Joe has become the... Because I think it's probably the confidence that she's gained.
Oh, how do you not be confident if you're...
And plus the relief, now she can just talk about it like, woohoo, let it all go.
The last thing I wanted to mention is how amazingly touching it was when she walked out and the crowd was immediately on their feet, and it lasted minutes, and it was saying everything. It was, we've just lived this with you, and we are so grateful for you, and we are your biggest fans, and let's celebrate this together. It was like this amazing kind of moment, and she was crushed, you know, It was awesome. It was a standing ovation we always wanted to give her at the end of this.
Yes, exactly it was.
That'll make you cry. Anything else?
At Carnegie Hall.
At Carnegie Hall, nonetheless, no doubt.
You know?
There were some great performances have been given. There is Joe Rowling. He gave this incredible, 17-year.
Gosh.
That's amazing. Yay, Joe!
All right, we're all still a little stunned, but maybe by next week we'll have more in-depth Joe bit-by-bit segments for you.
Next week's going to be my last week for a while.
Melissa's retiring from Pottercast, guys.
Forever! No, not forever.
I put her on a suspension. She's...
Hear me snort?
Yeah.
My roll of my eyes went into the next room. No, I have a book to write, finish writing, and a lot of research to do still. And I have a lot of work to do, so...
Yes.
One more week of this, and then I really do have to focus on that for a while.
Yeah.
Except that Matt's going to write it for me.
Yeah, I'm actually writing her book.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing that Jake
you're a ghostwriter?
I hope I'm a ghostwriter.
I hope that's written somewhere in the contract.
I decorated her house.
Crazy. You decorated my house. I forgot. You cooked dinner the other night because you like put the bean in a toaster. I don't know.
Yeah.
Matt does everything, guys. I'm just
really
around here. No. But, yeah.
Your house self. Awkward laughter.
One more thing.
Oh, go for it.
Before.
Matt has something to say.
I have something to say. I just want to say that I'm the one person in this room who did not see Rowling's reading, and I did not meet her in person, but I'm also not jealous of the people in this room at all. I've spent the last couple days with them kind of experiencing it secondhand, seeing their joy and enjoyment of this event, and it's wonderful, and I just want to say that you all really deserve this opportunity. I'm extremely proud of you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
It's lovely.
Thank you. Now go write my book. Alright, well, we have one more thing left to say.
All of you out there in Potterland, to keep twiddling your dials.
The next password will be Dumbledore.
Keep each other safe. Keep safe.
Good night.
We've missed it.
W3.
I confess myself disappointed.
Now. If you don't mind, I'm going to bed.
Great Scott, no wonder. Look at the time. We've been here nearly 4 hours. Spooky how the time flies when one's having fun.
This week's Pottercast was produced by the Pottercast Trio and Steve Bonnet. Thanks, as always, to our awesome transcription elves for transcribing this and all our other episodes on Pottercast.com. For more information about the show and how to contact us and be a part of future episodes, visit Pottercast.com.
Are you trying for a blooper right now?
Are we recording?
We're recording.
Yeah. Oh,
okay. Welcome to Pottercast number 122. Stop.
Two?
Three.
You sure?
Pottercast 122.
Sure?
I am. Yes.
Alright.
Pottercast, right, Sue?